Welcome. You are listening to a recording provided by Voice Republic at http://voicerepublic.com.
Blog Talk Radio. Audible.com is a proud sponsor of this Backslash Radio podcast. Audible.com is a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day free trial at audiblepodcast.com/that2us. Again, audiblepodcast.com/that2us.
Hello and welcome to Velvet Lips on Air, brought to you by the Back to Us Radio Network. I'm your host, Marla Renee Stewart of Velvet Lips, out of Atlanta, Georgia, and I have two guests today. I'm so proud to have Celeste and Danielle talk with us about their sexuality education work today. And today, we're going to go over 15 things men can do to be better lovers. So before we start off, I want to give Celeste and Danielle a brief introduction. Dr. Danielle Harrell and Celeste are San Francisco-based sex and relationship coaches who help men, women, and couples realize their full erotic potential and deepen their experience of pleasure, intimacy, and connection. Celeste and Danielle are the creators of the Somatica Method of Sex and Relationship Coaching and the authors of Confidence, the Extraordinary Lover's Guide to Being the Man You Want to Be and Driving Women Wild. So welcome, Celeste and Danielle. Thank you for coming and thank you for being here on the radio.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yes, we're very excited to be here.
Excellent, excellent. So I'm so excited because Celeste and I actually used to, we went to school together, and so I'm so excited to see all the growth that has really taken off in your business, and and your designing of the Somatica Method. Could you tell our viewers, or listeners, more about what the Somatica Method is?
Sure. The Somatica Method is a practical, experiential approach to sex and relationship coaching. So instead of just talking, which is what happens in most kind of sex therapy or traditional therapy, we really help people learn in hands-on experiential ways. And so we're going to teach people how to give great touch and have them touch us and us touch them back and give feedback on how they're coming across both interpersonally and physically and with their energy. So it's, you know, learning happens quite quickly when you're actually experiencing.
Yeah, and what we add to that is also we teach people how to be in a relationship lab with us. So it's around sexuality, but also around relationships, teaching people how to relate, how to share feelings, how to share, you know, like their desires. It's very effective.
Awesome, awesome. And you give workshops on how to do that?
So we do workshops, and we also do mostly individual and couples coaching, and we also teach coaches how to do the work that we do. So we train people in the Somatica Method, and then they can become professionals in this area.
That's excellent. So I was so excited to receive your book, Confidence. It is an awesome book. It has so many great tips. And can you tell us a little bit more about your book, Confidence?
Sure, I think we were inspired because we saw, you know, so many men out there in the dating and relating world trying to answer the question, like, what do women want from me? And really trying to work hard to kind of be what women want. And what we really wanted to help men do and encourage them to do is to be true to themselves in relationships. So not giving over everything to just please other people, but really finding out how they can feel strong and powerful in their approach to dating and sex, but also understand much more deeply what women are looking out for out of relationship. And I mean, we've gotten so much feedback that, you know, women love reading it because they feel like it's, there's sort of universal lessons in it, plus the whole second half of the book is like what's on the menu. So I think it can really apply to everyone, gay or straight. And it is definitely written kind of towards heterosexuals, but I think it has universal lessons in it.
I think so, too. I really loved all the lessons in there, and I really enjoyed reading it. And one of the things that you talk about is really about desire and really how to, you know, approach your own desires. And I guess specifically I'd like to ask you, like, what should men do? Like, what kind of approach should men take to I guess, think about their own desires or I guess, how they feel about their own desires.
Yeah, so I think men many times will train their, you know, it's okay to want sex, but they don't refine enough their desires and they don't get enough understanding of what they really want. Like, they're supposed to, they will train culturally to say, yeah, I see someone I want to have sex with, so I'm going to go and do that. And we encourage them to really find out what they want in what form and embrace it. And really celebrate it.
Yeah, I think so often men feel guilty about what they want, you know, and because a lot of times they're getting rejection, they're having to deal with a lot of rejection and fear, oh, am I going to be too much or am I going to want too much? So part of it is just accepting all of your desires and then knowing, sure, not, you know, we don't get all of our desires met out in the world, but at least we can embrace them and, as Danielle said, celebrate them and then really figure out what it is they are.
Awesome, awesome. And what do you suggest that they do to sort of seek out what exactly their desires are?
I think it helps to, you know, I think there's so many ways that you can find out what you want. You know, you can try it out in the dating world, right? You can just try different things, be creative. And also a lot of times men learn from their partners different ways of being sexual. Also, you know, reading erotica, looking at porn, although sometimes porn and erotica can be pretty unrealistic, so maybe we'll talk a little bit more about that later. And also just fantasizing and seeing, like, what in their sexual experiences make them the most turned on? You know, what are they thinking about right before they orgasm? Those kind of give you a lot of clues mm-hmm. as to what your biggest turn-ons are.
I want to add to this, but sometimes men and people generally have all kinds of desires that they're not comfortable with, you know, fetishes, different kinds of desires that they grew to get turned on by, and that's, you know, eventually it is wonderful to be able to incorporate that in their relationship because these are not going to go away.
It's interesting, you know, you really talk about, you know, being clear on your desires and how to approach that. One way I talk about that in my own work is sort of really knowing your sexual relationship identity, you know, with yourself and with your partner. And that's really a big part of it, is just knowing your desire and how you can, you know, relate to yourself, your body, and other people. You know, like you said, where it brings you to orgasm, those types of things, and really what you want for your sexual life. I think that's
We kind of call it your hottest sexual movie.
Oh, nice.
And for some, it can start really, you know, really early, you know, like... the way someone puts lingerie for them, or the way, you know, it doesn't have to be like all the way to, it can build to orgasm, it can start really early, just the way they look at each other, or, you know, just the way they approach and have the energy between them. So sexual movie starts really early on.
And so when you talk about when it starts really early on, I really sort of go back to thinking about your internal sense of being and how you, you know, relate in the world. And so I'm interested, you know, how do you help men sort of explore that, maybe their childhood or their, you know, internal emotional world? How do you go about helping them do that?
Well, I think that that's something that actually men are discouraged from a lot. You know, we look at women being, like, allowed their emotions much more. In the same way that women are repressed around their sexuality, men are really repressed around their emotionality. And so we help men explore their emotional world in a lot of different ways. One of them is just in an embodied way. Like, as they're walking around in the world, to start to notice if something happens in their life and they, like, get a tightness in their stomach, or they get flushed, or their heart beats faster. All of those are embodied indicators of feeling something, and often men are taught to just ignore them and just plow through and keep on moving, and we actually help them to kind of slow down and start to get a better idea of what's happening inside of themselves and get a language for it and a self-understanding so that they can, you know, they'll be able to be more present emotionally with themselves and other people.
And just the experience of being able to share all those little details of and nuances of I feel that with us encouraging them to explore it allows them to bring this feeling of, wow, it's something that I was probably never encouraged or even allowed to share with anyone before. I didn't know it's okay. I didn't know it's, you know, it's worthy of something. You know, I'm worried I'm going to be weak or something like that. So that really allows, as they're talking with us, they go through this process of unfolding that helps them feel better about their feelings and their emotional world.
I think men really open up sexually, and anybody can have sex, but to really open up to another person sexually, you also need to be vulnerable and open up to them emotionally and not just be like the guy who has it all together and the guy who never has a problem and the guy who never has a feeling or a fear, right? And guys think, well, mm-hmm. if I share my fears or my feelings, then people are going to think I'm weak or something's wrong with me. But we actually find, you know, especially women are always complaining, oh, my boyfriend or my husband is emotionally unavailable. And I think that's what it means. It means they're not really being vulnerable about the things that are challenges for them, right? Which is very different than being needy, being like, you have to fix me or, you know, like, save mm-hmm. me. But to just say, hey, this is something that's a challenge for me and I'm working on it, I think is a very powerful stance to take and really lets people into your world.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, it's like you said, it's sort of men are taught to be, you know, supermen in a sense that they can handle everything and, you know, and not think about their emotions and not, you know, be vulnerable. And vulnerability is so important, you know. It's really a way for us to not only get in touch with our feelings, but really stay connected to other people. So,
I think, you know, the other side that I'm seeing with men a lot now in the dating world is just this fear of opening up vulnerably, even about the things that they feel positive about, like love or passion or desire, because those things are very vulnerable to share with someone as well. And what does that mean? And does that mean we're in a relationship? Or can I still be myself if I really open up to my feelings around those things and get attached to somebody? And so, you know, encouraging men to share all of those things and know that they still can make whatever choices they want to make for themselves about how they live their lives.
Is there any sort of, I guess thinking about that, is there any sort of restraint that you would use? Because sometimes I think about maybe men who, you know, fall in love instantly and, you know, want to tell that to someone. You know, would you recommend, you know, say like you fall in love on your first date, would you recommend a man really localizing that or, you know, being vulnerable at that particular time?
We honestly believe that people need to be themselves. You know, eventually they will need to show up as themselves. So if people men tend to be very quickly to fall in love, so we would need to work with him a little bit to what does this mean? What is love for him, you know? So to help him understand what is he in love with? And really, you know, if he tends to be in love with everything very quickly, you know, but if it's developing very organically with other person, we're definitely going to encourage him to say something about it because, like, why hold back, you know? You are who you are.
Right.
Yeah, I think I just would echo what Danielle is saying. You know, part of the therapy or the work that we do that's kind of therapeutic is saying, okay, what's this pattern or habit that you have of just jumping into something, even if maybe you're not ready? So we want to check in with people. Are they really ready? And then if they are, then, like she said, be who you are, right?
Right. Because you're going to be found anyway. You know, eventually you're going to be revealed.
In some way or another, right? Okay. So, you know, thinking about that, it kind of goes into, you know, how do you express that feeling and, you know, how do you want to share that, you know, moment of love and really thinking about your personal boundaries. So identifying and sort of like sharing your boundaries, right? So how can, you know, identifying and sharing your boundaries, how can that be helpful for men in the long run?
Yeah, I think men many times are also being evaluated for what they give and not only about for who they are. And they tend to be very overwhelmed by it. Like, I need to give and give and give and, you know, like, I'll do that. And many couples I work with, I see the men trying to align the stars, I call it. You know, they try to find the right way that their partner is going to be willing to have sex with them. So a lot of the work we do with them is help them see what is too much, when it becomes resentment, and when they start feeling like they're giving, 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 but not getting back. Because eventually that will push them away from their relationship and will create them not to want to be part of the relationship. It will create resentment and a push away. So helping them identify the boundaries and feel comfortable and very honest, in a nice way, not in a mean way, to communicate it. Like, even help them find language to communicate it and can be very, very helpful. Relationship without boundaries is not a good, safe relationship.
That's right. Really create trust, right? They really create trust in relationships, and they also allow you to be generous, because then you just give because it feels good to give, as opposed to giving to try to get something back.
Right. And so, maybe tell us experience with any clients you have around, you know, regarding boundaries and setting boundaries and sharing their boundaries? Would you be able to give us any insight on maybe past experience?
Sure, I see it all the time. You know, what happens is, like, a lot of times men get into a relationship and their partner, like, wants to train them to be a certain way, and they start giving up things that they really love that make them feel alive and excited, right? So even if it's something as simple as, like, I'm sorry, but I know it scares you, but I'm still going to ride my motorcycle, or it might seem like little things, but in some ways those can be like some of the biggest things, right? I need to have time with my friends sometimes, even if you don't totally love and approve of my friends because you think they talk bad about people, or, you know, whatever it is, to actually say, in order to be myself and to be connected with you, I have to do this. Or, you know, that's sort of like keeping things that you want to keep. And then there's like setting boundaries. Like, I know you want me to, be home every night, but I need to actually do something else, or, you know.
So I've been having this very interesting dynamic with the clients that I've been seeing where they're sort of in, you know, one partner is monogamous and one partner is polyamorous. And so really identifying and sharing their boundaries has been really difficult for them, and I was wondering if you have any insight on how to negotiate, you know, a marriage when one person is monogamous and one person, you know, realizes that they're polyamorous.
Yeah, I think that that's one of the biggest challenges that I'll see in my practice also. And, you know, whenever there's a very big difference in philosophy between a couple, I think those cause the biggest problems, right? Or desire or need or something like that. Those are the people who end up in our offices. I think the biggest thing is not so much monogamy or non-monogamy, although that's a huge hot button. It's like, can you really empathize with the other person's need, whatever it is, and understand that, you know, that need and why it's beautiful and important, and also see that that your needs are different, and then say, how can I make room for my partner, or how can I keep them safe as best as possible? But when there's those big differences, you know, you have to sort of see, is one person going to have to deal with disappointment? Is one person willing to grow and deal with their insecurities? Is it okay if one person is non-monogamous while the other person is monogamous? All of those things. And I think one of the biggest things that I emphasize is that the monogamous person has the entire society's approval behind them. And the non-monogamous person is seen as like this horrible, evil person. So, you know, to really try to balance that and make it very safe for both of those points of view to be, heard and understood and as completely valid ways to live a life.
Right. So you think there's a way to definitely negotiate a monogamous person and a non-monogamous relationship?
Sure. I have couples in that situation who are staying married and doing it. You know, I have one couple who's he's non-monogamous and she's monogamous, and he plays within certain boundaries, and she's not interested in that. So, you know, it's, they're very evolved in terms of their ability to make space for one another.
Yeah, I think the challenge can be when people try to, the two parties try to convince each other that their way is the right way, you know, and it's actually, mm-hmm. there's no right way. It's really about that's who I am and that's my movie. When polyamorous is just a movie, you know, just like that's how I want to express my sexuality and that's who I am. And say just a movie. A movie is a big core thing of who we are, big part of who we are. And I have a couple that she's, her core movie is to be the one, and her partner, his core movie is to be loved by many. And there's a big clash between those two, and we actually been working on that for a long time together to respect those needs and see how they can get what they need in the relationship.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so interesting. So, you know, a lot of sexuality, to sort of shift gears here, a lot of sexuality educators really emphasize the use of breath work. And I, you know, I think it's very important to just sort of be centering grounded with breath work. How does, breath work really contribute, to men being better lovers? How does breath work help that?
Yeah, go ahead.
So breathwork, the breathwork we teach helps men to get connected with major three parts of themselves. One is the heart, their feelings. The other one is the gut feeling, as we call the intuition. And then the other one is their sexuality, their cock. And I think many men, when they go to dating or something like this, they kind of like in their head, what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to say? What am I talking about? And they get so stuck in their head and their thought processes, they don't let themselves relax into what feels good in their body and don't exude the sexual energy. And you can exude the sexual energy only when you relax and feel your sexual energy, which is your cock energy. So we teach them this wonderful three-step breath that allows them to feel it in their body. And that's a wonderful breath work to do before you go on a date or before you meet your partner or before you want to have sex, to kind of go back and into your body and bring your sexuality out.
We actually have some audio downloads for both men and women on our website where they can go through a longer set of breath work and just like get more deeply into it. But I think even if you take, you know, three breaths into your body in any moment, and just kind of let them travel down, you can get so connected to what's happening right now, as opposed to what's going to happen in the future or how did I mess this up in the past or something like that. And it really helps you get grounded in your sensations, which are essential to having great sex.
Yes. And I have a quick question for you really about breath work and how it can be helpful for men who have premature ejaculation. Is there any maybe specific technique that you help them, you know, to get grounded? Because it seems like, you know, they tend to say they're more sensitive or, you know, their penis is more sensitive, and so they're trying to get in tune, but it's kind of, maybe they're too much in tune. Can you say something to that, I guess?
Yeah, we actually have a much longer 2-hour audio download that we do just on ejaculation control, and I think breathwork is foundational to that. And it's a very particular kind of breathwork, as you say, because it needs to slow down the body so that you can kind of feel a connection to your own arousal and understanding where you are on that, and to really relax your anal muscles in particular. So there's really good explanations in the download. But basically, breath work tells your body that nothing needs to happen quickly, nothing needs to, that you can take time and to slow and kind of know where you are. So breath work is the first step in ejaculation control.
I guess I want to sort of shift gears again and sort of talk about, like, sensuality and intimacy. How do you help men to be more sensual? Because sometimes, you know, it seems like men just kind of want to go right in for it real quick and sort of not necessarily skip the foreplay, but, you know, make it brief. Or how do you negotiate foreplay and sensuality with the male clients that you have?
Yeah, so when we work with our clients, and that's really a big part of what we teach men, is to be sensual and learn how to touch from some sort of their own pleasure. And for many men, that's very new. That's something that they never heard before, never thought about before. And a lot of what we find with men is that their touch is very heavy. So it's kind of like not sensual. And we practice with them. We show them different kinds of touch. We show them how to touch very lightly. We give them feedback. We teach them how to grab with passion. So we help them find their way and their rhythm to do this combination touch, light touch and squeezing and all of it together. And honestly, the best way to learn is practice and practice and practice and get feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And to focus in on all of your senses, right? You know, so smelling the other person's body, or, you know, with touch, or just listening to the sounds that are being made, and focusing on all the senses. And to bring it back to breath work again, to breathe in concert with your touch, you know, so you're really slowing things down and experiencing the sensual, tactile, you know, smells,
mm-hmm.
all of those things of a sexual experience.
Do you think sensuality is really sort of about embracing sort of your softer side?
Not necessarily. I mean, I think that you can really, sensuality can also be, you know, you can play very sensually with dominance or intensity or passion. It's more like embracing your, you know, it could be embracing the soft side. It could be embracing the animal. It could be embracing your sense of power inside of yourself. But it's really being in the moment and I think savoring, right? Like, instead of just trying to get to the end game, you know, you're just like, enjoying every step of the journey. But it can be lots of different kinds of self-expression. You know, it can be very intense or powerful, or you could be receptive and gentle.
And what I want to add to what Celeste said, and this is that, it's not so much, you know, people get confused between giving and receiving here, and I really think that men need to own it. It's something they need to do for themselves. It is self-expression. It is about, like, that's the energy that I want to exude that suits me well. And from there, sensuality can be so beautifully flowing. If you give touch just because you want to please someone else, that's kind of boring.
Yeah. Right. So for those of us just joining us, we are with Celeste and Danielle, and sort of we're about halfway through our 15 things that men can do to be better lovers. We talked about, you know, accepting your approach, your own desires, getting clear about your desires, you know, exploring your internal emotional world, being vulnerable, really identifying and sharing your boundaries, and being present, using breath work as a way to get present, and also using breath work as a way to divulge in your sensuality and also savoring the moment, savoring each step of the, you know, sexual journey of yourself and your body. Now we're going to talk about what you talked about it earlier before, but talking about your hottest sexual movie. And how can men develop, I guess, their hottest sexual movie? Like, how do you get men to develop that?
Well, I think knowing your hottest sexual movie is actually core to any sort of long-term successful sexual relationship, because if you don't have the aspects of your sexual movie, the things that turn you on the most about sex, then eventually sex is going to get boring or dull or routine. So knowing, you know, like, what words do you need to hear in order to get you really hot, or what do you want to say, or, you know, how can your partner open to you? It could be lots of different kinds of things that are hot for you, like feeling super desired, but it could also be feeling, emasculated, or there are many, many things that turn people on, and we want to make space that, like, whatever it is beautiful, and that you can do it in a way that is safe and consensual with a partner. So without judgment, to really see, like, what is it that turns me on? Do I want to feel powerful and competent? Do I want to feel taken advantage of? Like, whatever it is, and what also does your partner want, and how can those movies overlap with each other?
That's amazing. Yes, that's awesome. I'm definitely going to embrace that, the hottest sexual movie. I feel like I have clips, like hottest sexual clips that I have that I can go to. But to make a whole movie out of it would be a very nice experience, to put that all together and sort of, you know, foster my own, you know, sexual energy
It really helps people when we help them define it in that way, because it takes all the weirdness out of it, you know? Like, everyone has their movie. It's very clear that everyone has their movie. There might be different movies, and as we help them really define it, it gives some substance to the fantasy. It's not like, oh, you're just, like, addicted to porn, you know? Like, there's something that you know? So we help them extract it, and it makes it so much more powerful to be able to negotiate and communicate with each other. They give them language to communicate with each other, what really turns them on, and give them ability to bring empathy to that experience and build on it. Like, my partner wants something else, but that doesn't mean that what I want is bad. And again, instead of, like, who's right to create something that's going to be on the same team and be able to play together.
And I really think about, thinking about, like, your hottest sexual movie and being able to, you know, empathize with your partner, I also think about, like, experimentation, you know, just various sort of erotic activities that, you know, you can do, you know, with each other, and how you express your sexuality and your sexual self. And thinking of, I have a list of erotic activities that I show, you know, my clients and people at my workshops, where they're just like, whoa, huh, I never thought of that, And so I think that's really a way to sort of inject some clips into your hottest sexual movie, I guess, and see how they can really connect with themselves and seeing what's new for them.
And I think that, not to skip ahead, but I think, why not, you know, it really relates to one of our suggestions about the 15 things that men can do, which is to initiate new experiences, right? Once you have the list, you know, you have to be brave enough to give it a try and try something on and see, is my partner going to receive that, or do they want it? Do I want to ask for it first, or just give it a try in bed? Which means being willing to take risk and willing to deal with the feeling of, you know, I think there is a feeling of rejection that comes. It doesn't mean that your partner is rejecting you, but it's scary to think maybe they don't want what I want, or maybe they'll think that I'm weird for wanting what I want, right? But to take that brave step and to know, you know, some of the things are going to really be received and other things aren't, but that doesn't mean it's a rejection of you. It just means you got to keep negotiating and see where you can find that overlap.
Yeah, Yeah, and I think also, too, being able to just sort of put it in your fantasy world as well, you know, and being okay with that experience of using it as fantasy.
Absolutely. You can always run a movie in your mind.
So it's interesting, I really, with the latest studies that have been, you know, coming out really about porn and how it really changes your brain, can you give us more insight, I guess, about why men should, how they should relate to porn and what, basically how they should relate to porn?
So I feel like they need to get clear on their relationship to porn, right? Because it is so pervasive and accessible, and so you can just sort of let it come in and, you know, in whatever way without even being conscious or conscientious about it and how it's affecting you. We don't have any like, oh, porn is bad. That's not the feeling that we give. I watch porn. I know, you know, I think it has its place in people's sex lives, and at the same time, it does have an effect. It can have effect on the levels of arousal that you get and how quickly you get them. So you might not be learning much about full body sensation as opposed to just very much brain cock sensation.
Mm-hmm.
And you can kind of lose out on that. I think in the long run that can affect your sexual abilities, right? Because if you're having like huge injections of an intense drug, then, you know, after a while, your body gets inured to that a little bit. Whereas if you go through different pathways of arousal, like full body sensational arousal and fantasies that you make up in your own head and then occasionally coming in with some porn, I think that you can have a much more well-rounded and developed sexual self that's probably going to last you much longer in your life. And also, I think porn is not the greatest teacher of how to have good sex because, mm-hmm. you know, it's for the camera, right? And so a lot of stuff that I see happening to a clitoris, for example, in those movies, like, make me want to, you know, like, it's like a man feels when somebody kicks somebody in the balls. It's like, ow! So it's not the greatest teacher, and so I think just like for men to be conscious how they're using it and see how it affects their erotic energy towards other people and their opinions towards other people, and just be mindful.
And I want to add to that sometimes I see couples, especially women, very, very scared of their partners watching porn. And I like to intervene in that situation and help women develop relaxation around porn. I think women have a lot of negative feelings to porn. And sometimes I help them see that, like many times when their relationship is good and people are connected, just having, you know, like masturbation with porn here and there is not a bad thing. Porn has been very villainized, I don't know how to say this word. So I try to give it more proportion because, you know, they're going to watch porn anyway. So we're going to try. We don't want to make something that's, sneaking or lying or doing anything behind anyone's back. We're going to create it as something that, you know, a possible activity when things are doing well. It's not always a good activity if things are not doing well, because especially men can get very attached to porn because they feel ashamed about it or because they feel like it's not okay to express their desire. So if someone is very attached to porn and becomes their home world, that thing is not fully healthy there. And it's an opportunity to really kind of explore what becomes like a substance instead of something fun to do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we help them untangle this relationship that they have to porn and make it more relaxed.
Yeah.
So I know one of the things that you talk about in your book is really about like passion and making sure you're not, you talked about a little bit about this earlier, but really not, you know, giving up on your desires and your passion. Can you speak more to how, you know, your passion can, you know, make you a better lover?
Yeah, I think you need to be passionate in every area of your life, not just about your partner, about sex, in order to feel desire throughout your life. And so finding out what makes you passionate in the world is really important. And also, you know, we have such a compartmentalized viewpoint of sex. And so often men feel like when they're in a relationship, they're not allowed to have any attraction to other people. And they do have attraction to other people, and then they feel guilty. And this is this whole cycle. Instead of just saying, like, I can have attraction and even flirtation, you know, within my partner's comfort, depending on whether they're there or not or whatever our agreements are, but I can have all of these experiences and really still be within my agreements around whatever my partner and my agreements are, right? So to actually open up that we are sexual all the time, there's no time when we can actually put that away, so we might as well just embrace that and flirt with the world. And then, you know, if it's a monogamous situation, as Mae West once wisely said, it doesn't matter where you get your appetite as long as you eat at home, you know. And yes, some people are fine with you eating elsewhere as well, you know, if they have a non-monogamous experience. But for you to actually allow that erotic energy to be something that flows through your life all the time.
Yes, I completely agree. I definitely think about, I really think about seduction in a sense, and not necessarily just seduction in your own, you know, in your own bedroom or in your own relationship, but really. To be a better you. So it's sort of, you know, using that flirtatiousness and you said bringing it home, you know, or whatever, whatever you need to do with that sexual energy to make, you know, your life better, your love life better. So go ahead. Is there anything?
Oh, no, it just paused for a second. There was a little bit of a lack of being able to hear you, so I think that's why we were quiet for a second, just waiting
for
Chris to come back. Yeah. But go ahead.
Sorry.
No worries.
So with really, with my single male clients, a lot of questions come around rejection. So, you know, fears of rejection, you know, fears of just, you know, performance anxiety. What can you sort of, how do you get men to sort of release their fears?
So I think that being thought of as the person who's supposed to initiate, I mean, if it's two men, you know, then you've got two initiators, so it's a little bit easier. But in general, men are expected to be the initiators in relationships, sex, dating. And so I think they actually have to be able to deal with a lot more rejection in general. And in order to do that, it's like instead of thinking, how am I going to get this other person to be with me? You go out in the world and you say, how am I going to enjoy whatever connections I make? And see what's available, right? So even if you're just talking to somebody for a little while, that might feel really good, even if it doesn't turn into something else, you know? So just going out and not saying, like, I need to get somewhere, I need to make something happen, you know, there's all this pressure, and you're not going to make something happen with everybody, and not everybody's your flavor, and you're not everybody's flavor, and that's actually a normal part of life, right? And so going out with a little bit of the attitude, I'm going to enjoy myself and meet people and see what it feels like, to just be in the moment with them instead of going into, if I don't get somewhere, I failed. I think that really helps a lot with rejection.
Yeah. So I guess, too, it's, you know, just accepting that it's going to be okay. Like, regardless, like you said, not everybody is going to be your flavor. So just really accepting that you're okay and you're fine the way you are and you're just moving about the world and, you know, just making sure you're trying to be, you're as confident as you need to be.
Yeah. Plenty of people say her. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I'll say that it's many times easier said than done. So for all the listeners that feel like, oh my God, it sounds so easy. It is really, I think, one of the things that it's a lot of work to keep working on it and keep reminding yourself that you are wonderful, even if one person rejects you or even 50 or 100 people reject you, you're still wonderful and have your own You know, there will be plenty that would love you and would love to be with you. When rejection hits this core feeling of I'm not lovable, and that's why it's so hard to...
I have so much compassion for people who go out and try. I mean, if I want to ask somebody for their number or something like that, I've, like, worked my way up to it, and, like, dude, it's pretty big, and then doesn't matter how much I do, my heart is beating so fast, my hands are shaking, and I'm like, can I have your number? You know, that's like terrifying. It's terrifying, no matter how many times you do it. So there's something about just accepting, too, that it's not going to get easy. It's just going to be like, okay, I'm dealing with that fear. Here it goes. You know, it'll get easier, but I think there's always a little bit of that fear, and that's normal.
Yeah. Someone sort of explained it in a way of, like, it doesn't matter. If you dive into a pool, you're always going to come back up, right?
Right.
So it doesn't matter if you touch the bottom or not. You're coming back up, so it's going to be okay. At the end, it's going to be okay. It's just a matter of getting through it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I know, you know, you talk about, you know, really never to stop growing, you know, so, and I really talk a lot about that, just sort of, you know, educating yourself constantly, you know, whether it's a new thing you want to try out or whatever it is that you're really educating yourself. So how do you tell men, you know, hey, just don't stop there. Keep going. Like, try to discover yourself even more. Because I feel like sometimes they're really sort of satisfied and settled in their ways.
It's so funny that you're saying it because I have a client that his wife is terrified. Every time he does something right, he stops right away. She's terrified because he's like, she really wants him to do it well. At the same time, he gets, like, so smug and happy about it. He's not interested in doing the stuff that he did well. So, yes, it's really important to keep growing and keep trying and keep different angles. Otherwise, we get bored. And boredom is really death sentence for many, many things in our lives, not only our relationships, or, you know, our feeling of well-being, too. So, kind of keep exploring, keep looking for new things, keep finding things that are fascinating for you. When we teach men this stuff, we kind of demonstrate what would feel like to even get the boring touch, you know, like to stay in touch all the time. That's boring, right? So it's a good way to demonstrate how to goes for many, many other things, not only for touch. Fantasies, or, you know, going out and eating in different restaurants, etc.
And I think if we're looking at long-term relationship especially, you know, I think sometimes the contracts in long-term relationship are, we're just going to be the person that we were when we met the other person and never change, and then everybody's going to be okay, and there won't be any anxiety. And that's so boring, right? Instead of saying, we're going to grow and change, we're going to be so different when we're 35 and when we're 25 and when we're 45 and when we're 65, and to actually allow for that growth to happen, which creates a distance and keeps mystery and excitement and uncertainty in relationships, because we do need connection and attachment and a sense of, like, yeah, this is my person. And at the same time, we also need uncertainty and mystery and excitement and continuing to grow and explore who you are as a person, both erotic, emotional, you know, in all of these different areas of your life, really keeps things exciting over time in relationships.
Yeah, it's just like being too predictable just can kill a relationship.
Kill. Kill. Murder.
Like, oh, I know what you're going to do next. Okay.
Yeah.
Turn here. All right. So.
Exactly.
How do you get your clients or the men, your male clients to get out of their comfort zone and to get out of doing those same things over and over and over again?
Well, that's why experiential work is so important, because, you know, in our offices, we have them practice with us or our other practitioners. And that way we can say, like, okay, I know it's scary. This isn't something you've tried before, but I don't think it's going to kill you. You know, you're with a super non-judgmental person. I'm always telling people, like, try it with the puppy before you try it with the dragon. You know? I'm going to be so gentle and help you explore this new way of being in yourself or acting or saying what you need to say, and then we're going to refine it, and then you're going to go take it out into the world, right? So I think that's why the experience of being in intimate connection with our clients, both physically and emotionally, helps them take those steps. Like, okay, I did it in Celeste's office. I did it in Danielle's office. Now I think I can do it out in the world.
And when we open to that experience is our own silliness and our own humanity and our own, you know, humanity is the best way to call it, you know. So we're not trying to be like all perfect all the time, and we show them our sides of vulnerability and insecurities to help them feel okay with learning new things. And so it's really encouraging and brings a very playful atmosphere to the room as we experiment with them.
So are there any other sort of helpful hints that you would give to, you know, men who want to be better lovers?
Well, I think, you know, I do want to make one plug for our men's workshop, which isn't coming up until January, but, you know, January is right around the corner because time flies no matter what you do, I think, these days.
Mm-hmm.
You don't even have to be having fun. We have a men's workshop on how to be a great lover to women in particular, and it's really practicing in an experiential way all of these things, and there's a hands-on component of it where they actually get to practice on women models and get feedback on their quality of their touch and the quality of their presence. So that can be a really powerful experience. And the other thing that I want to offer up is that we do a professional training. So people who are interested in helping people with their sex lives and relationships and know that they can be in those kinds of intimate, open connections with somebody, because those kinds of people are very rare and important work needs to be done out in the world. We also have a professional training that starts in April to get new coaches trained to start doing this work. And changing people's lives. And it's such fulfilling, exciting work. So we love training new folks.
That's excellent. And what's your website?
It's www.celesteanddanielle.com. That's spelled CelesteAndDanielle.com.
That is so amazing. So I know we did it. Are there any other announcements that you have? You guys are good?
I think that's it.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I'm so excited. We didn't take questions today because we're doing something new and exciting. I'm all about, like, doing something new and exciting. And so afterwards, we are going to do a live Google Hangout on air. And this is going to be one of the, you know, this is just, like, the first of its kind. And super excited. So you will actually get to see us in person. And you can go on the blurb, and you can hit the Facebook invite, and you can see where it's at, or you can just Google it, and we should be there. And we'll be taking all your questions live and really and going back over the show topics that we had today. And I'm so excited because I will be doing a workshop at the Center for Sex and Culture later on. It's called The Movement of Your Erotic Thoughts. It takes place at 7 p.m., so please come on out to check that out if you're in the Bay Area. And I think that's it, so make sure you tune in to VelvetLipsLLC.com, where we will have Velvet Lips on air, and you can also check out the podcast. So thanks again. Thank you, Celeste and Danielle, for taking the time out to do this, and looking forward to seeing the beautiful faces live.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. We really enjoyed being here.
All right.
Audible.com is a proud sponsor of this That's Us Radio podcast. Audible.com is a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day free trial at audiblepodcast.com/that2us. Again, audiblepodcast.com/that2us.
You have been listening to a recording provided by Voice Republic at http://voicerepublic.com.